I like to go bowling with my friend Bert, with my bowling ball and my bowling shirt.
The Bowling Centers Association of Wisconsin created a neat event recently, a road tour of Wisconsin's vintage-era bowling establishments. It was a day-long excursion to some of these mom-and-pop social hubs in the southeastern part of the state. Yvonne Bennett organized the tour of four vintage bowling centers. She is executive director of the Pewaukee-based Bowling Centers Association of Wisconsin. Yvonne, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Kate. Thanks for having me.
Well, so there is modern bowling, and then there's vintage bowling. Help us understand, what's the difference between the two?
Well, the most important thing, I guess, is to understand that bowling is a fun sport for everyone, whether you're manually keeping scores and bowling on old wood lanes or in family fun centers with redemption centers and fun games and other things in addition to bowling. The Vintage Alley Tour and the Vintage Alley Centers really is a throwback to the early 1900s when bowling first became such a relevant part of all of our communities, particularly here in Wisconsin. So you may see wood lanes. You'll see, as you said in your intro earlier, manual scoring by hand, usually paper and pencil, or maybe with grease pencils on telescore unit glass or screen paper. And sometimes the bowling centers you'll see with wood benching and old flooring. Manual pin setters still exist in three of our centers here in the state of Wisconsin.
Human pin setters.
Yes,
these are
yes.
People who are in a very tight space, I understand.
Very much so. We recently in the Vintage Alley's tour did feature one such center in Fort Atkinson at their social club down on the Rock River, and they had young boys, 11, 12-year-old boys that were actually doing the pin setting. And it's a semi-automatic process. There is machinery there, but the boys have to load the pins actually into the rack and then set the rack, set the pins on the lanes for the bowlers, and, of course, clear the deadwood and return the bowling balls back to the bowlers through the overlaying ball returns. So it's quite an experience if you've not seen it. As I said, there are some beautiful large family entertainment centers throughout our state, and for today's generation of bowlers, many have not even seen what the history of our sport looked like at the turn of the century and well into the 1900s. Automation didn't really start happening until the 1950s, so to have this legacy in our state is actually quite honorable.
Take us back to the early 1900s and the history as these bowling centers became the heartbeat of so many smaller communities here in Wisconsin.
Well, my good friend John Gerda, if you follow him in Wisconsin and his historian perspective of our state, the development of our area really came along the waterways and the rivers and then later the railways. And so many of the bowling centers that were built as far back, they've been dated to the, actually, 1850s, and these bowling centers cropped up in bars and taverns and lodges and other places where people congregated. And the Europeans, as they settled into Wisconsin in the 1850s and into the early 1900s, brought bowling with them. So it did become part of the social fiber, as you said, of these small rural communities along the riverways, along the railways, and then as the car became popular, along our highways. And so it's really just the place where people would come after work, they would socialize, they would recreate, and enjoy time with family and friends, you know, in their local tavern or bar or pub.
And it's amazing that some of these small bowling centers are thriving today, are still bringing people together in a social hub, as you say.
Yes, absolutely. And because society has changed so much, particularly with the age of technology and all the things that are available to especially young people in the way of sports and other activities, they've really had to change what their business model looks like to remain relevant and viable in their communities. And in many communities, as bowling centers were risked to be shuttered and closed forever, the communities have come together to save bowling centers. Two of the centers that we featured on the Vintage Alley's tour a few weekends ago are such stories. Cornerstone Palmyra had been around since the turn of the century, the 19th to the 20th century, built in a beautiful Cream City brick building in downtown Palmyra. And after the last owner left the center over the holidays, I guess it was the Christmas holidays of 2015 or 2014, they left the center in disrepair. And so the new owners, when they came in, sort of found out. They bought this beautiful restaurant and bar. And, oh, by the way, there's four lanes in the lower level. And it was like, okay, well, what do we do with this? And they weren't real sure they were going to be able to maintain the bowling center or even get it back up to specifications. And the community came together and held a big fundraiser with the new owners, and they were able to restore, certify, and then reopen in the summer of 2015. So communities do appreciate these opportunities to have bowling lanes in their small, especially in the smaller rural communities.
Yvonne Bennett is with us. She is executive director of the Pewaukee-based Bowling Centers Association of Wisconsin. You can join in the conversation about bowling centers, favorite ones that you have frequented, whether when you were a kid or bowling centers you go to today. Why do you love to bowl? Where do you go? 800-642-1234. What does bowling mean to you? Is it a family affair? 800-642-1234. Yvonne Bryan on Facebook says, Turner Hall in Monroe has eight lanes and a friendly staff. It's always fun going there with my kids, Bryan says, and my 91-year-old dad tagged along last time. Great memories of going there since I was little.
Turner Hall's a great story. Yes, it's a beautiful, a beautiful eight-lane center in the Turner Hall, which for most of us that are here in Wisconsin probably know what Turner Halls are. We have one here in Milwaukee, not with bowling lanes, but the Turner Halls and the gymnastics clubs that, again, cropped up as the Europeans came and settled into Wisconsin are part of our history. And so, yes, Turner Hall, a beautiful facility, and yes, eight lanes, although I would say they are not necessarily vintage. They have updated and aren't what you might expect in terms of the era that they were built, because they have updated and done some really nice things with their bowling facility there in Monroe.
How have these bowling alleys changed their business model? As you mentioned, they have added taverns, eating restaurants, some games. What have they done to keep people coming in their doors?
Well, interestingly enough, those that were perhaps built as taverns and restaurants have remained primarily taverns and restaurants. And I tell folks, especially here in Wisconsin in the upper Midwest, that bowling is just one of the many social activities that families and friends can do when they come to their corner bar or tavern. So it's not dissimilar to shooting pool or darts or other recreational indoor activities. What people have done since the advent of these hubs in the state is create maybe horseshoe and volleyball facilities on the outside perimeter of their property. Many of them have gone to including beanbag or cornhole, depending on what part of the state you're from, what you would know that activity as. And just last week, I was out visiting centers up north of Green Bay, and I was turned on to something called dart. Dartball.
Dartball.
And I had never seen it before, but there's dartball leagues in the Green Bay area, and it's mostly a bar and tavern game, and there's leagues, and teams get together and play, and it's throwing darts at what would be like a baseball diamond field, and you score singles and doubles and triples and home runs and strikeouts, and it's just one more way for people to come and, again, socialize in the bar environment and the tavern environment.
Yvonne, what turned you on to bowling?
Well, I have to say, Kate, that I grew up in the sport. I am originally from the Washington, D.C. metro area, so there's a shout-out. I know there's some folks that are listening in from back home. Washington, D.C. was home. My father managed bowling centers for a corporate chain in that area, so at the age of 10, I took up bowling, and bowling was just part of our family. I will say that where I grew up, we didn't have these vintage 4-, 6-, or 8-lane centers. They were all mostly corporate-owned. And where I grew up, 32 Lanes was a small bowling center. So moving to Milwaukee in 1994 and getting to work in the bowling industry for the first time was really an eye-opener to me as to the legacy of our sport and the heritage of the game. And but that's what brought me into it, was I was born into it as part of my DNA.
Wisconsin is home to 84 bowling centers that have between 2 and 6 lanes. This is the most of any state in the country. That's according to our guest on Wisconsin Weekend, Yvonne Bennett. She heads up the Pewaukee-based Bowling Centers Association of Wisconsin. Do you have a beloved bowling center that is part of the heritage of your community or of your neighborhood? Let's hear about it. 800-642-1234. Do you love to bowl? Where do you go? Join in at 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll return after a check of the latest news. Wisconsin is home to 308 bowling centers. Our state ranks 3rd in the number of places to bowl, only behind Pennsylvania's 318 and New York's 317 bowling centers. We're going on a tour of the gems around Wisconsin and getting the history of bowling in our state with Yvonne Bennett. She's executive director of the Bowling Centers Association of Wisconsin. And now let's hear about the bowling alleys that you love for their vintage charm. What are your memories? 800-642-1234. What is it about a small bowling center that binds a community? 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Yvonne, how did bowling become so popular in Wisconsin? How did it get a toehold?
Again, I think it was because of our climate and the fact that people looked for places to go after work. Wisconsin, and back at the turn of the century, was largely industrial and blue-collar. And so workers, as you know, as you drive around the state even today, there are many corners where on 3 of the 4 corners there's a bar or a tavern. So bars and taverns are just part of the social fiber of our state and our communities. And so I think bowling became popular because people were in these places of business, and again, it was something to do when they got together and to recreate and to enjoy social time over a beer or an old-fashioned.
Marsha on Facebook says, the reason I love bowling, she says, is the smiles on my students' faces on Monday mornings when they tell me about bowling over the weekend with their Special Olympics team. She says they're so proud, so excited, and I adore hearing about their accomplishments. How do you know about the Special Olympics team and bowling in Special Olympics?
Yes, Special Olympics obviously features many sports, and bowling is one that allows people of all physical abilities to be able to enjoy the game. And yes, bowling is part of the Special Olympics. In fact, the National Special Olympics will be held this year in Seattle, Washington. It's the national event, and my good friend Kevin Hong, who has the Vintage Alleys project on a national program basis, is going to be the bowling coordinator out in Seattle for that event. So, yes, there are Special Olympic programs tied to schools and other community activities and groups such as Boys and Girls Clubs or Girl Scouts, Boy Scouts, as well as the Special Olympics just as their own organization. And there are bowling centers throughout the state that host and support the Special Olympics efforts. So, yes, Wisconsin does have a very strong and very large contingency of bowlers that enjoy the sport and the game.
Let's go to John in Green Bay. Hi, John.
Good morning. I grew up in Mellon, Wisconsin, and I manually set pins at the Spa Bowling Tavern for 10 cents a game. And you'd start probably around 7 o'clock at night and go until about 10 or 11 o'clock at night after school. This was in the late 40s. And, of course, 10 cents a game, you didn't make a lot of money. So what you did, it was a four alley operation. And so you would set both lanes. And so you were constantly moving. I mean, you had to jump over the wall between the lanes. And, of course, it was hot. And you're working two different operations. And you had to manually pick up the pins, put them in the rack, put the rack down. And you did this for 10 cents a game. And, of course, on one lane, you couldn't make much money, so you did it on two lanes. And, of course, as the night progressed, occasionally some person that was had too much to drink, while you were down there picking up the pins, would throw the ball down the alley, and you had to be aware of that.
You had to be quick on your feet, John.
You had to be mobile.
Yvonne, how about John's story?
That's great. And, John, thank you for joining in on the call-in this morning. I have to tell you that when I go into some of our bowling centers that are now being managed or operated by second or third generation family members, I hear these stories like John's throughout the state, and it does my heart good to know that there are people still around to tell these stories because, again, as I said earlier in the segment, our young people today don't even realize, I think, some of the history of how bowling became so popular, and folks like John who made it even possible for bowling to exist, you know, 40, 50, 60 years ago. So it's a great story. I will tell you, 10 cents a game, we, on our Vintage Alleys tour at Fort Atkinson Club, we had two young men, as I said, that did the pin setting for us, and I think for the hour and a half, they earned $42.50. The two of them for setting pins for our little group.
So, inflation.
And that was on tips. You know, everybody tipped towards our pin boys or pin setters. And the game has come a long way, hasn't it, John?
Well, I don't remember getting many tips, but I can say it was a opportunity for a kid, one of the few opportunities to make any money, you know.
John, do you still go to a local bowling center today?
No.
It's just
I've never really been a bowler. It kind of turned me off.
Well, thank you so much for calling in with that story. What a pleasure. Let's go to Rich now in Manitowoc. Hi, Rich.
Hi there. Hey, just to follow on John's call, a little Wisconsin history. The very first automatic pin spotter was in Manitowoc, and it was in a cute little six-lane bowling alley called Seitz's downtown. It was a beautiful old house with a hardwood side, the walls and everything. Unfortunately, in the early 80s, it burned down, so it's no longer around.
Wow.
But it's in the Bowling Hall of Fame, if anybody ever goes there in St. Louis, that Manitowoc, it was about 10 years before AMF came out with the first automatic spotter, but the site just built their own one out of wood.
Yvonne, do you recall this history?
I did not know this history, so thank you, Rich, for sharing it. I will also add that the Bowling Hall of Fame and Museum has since moved from St. Louis. It's now in Arlington, Texas, where the International Bowling Campus resides with the American Hall of Fame, as well as the BPAA Hall of Fame, the Bowling Proprietors Association Hall of Fame. So United States Bowling Congress and the BPAA now support the Hall of Fame and Museum down in Texas. So that pin setter equipment is still on exhibit and on display. I would encourage people to go down to Arlington and check it out.
Rich, thank you so much for calling in for that bit of history. Yvonne, how has bowling changed over the decades? How have you seen the sport change?
Well, you can't talk about the change in bowling without first probably talking about the technology and the equipment. And I really don't want to turn this into a discussion or even debate about that, but the sport has, like with every other sport that people enjoy, has seen a explosion in the use of technology to enhance the ability of players to score. And that may be through the bowling balls or lane conditions, the way the lane dressing or lane oil is applied to the lanes. And so scoring has gone up significantly over the last 30 or 40 years. And so purists will debate, there was nothing like bowling with an old rubber ball or plastic ball back in the 1970s before urethane came out. So technology certainly in the sport itself has played a role. There's also been the technology, personal devices, games, entertainment opportunities for young people and adults that has taken away from the, some would say, passive opportunity to bowl. You go to a bowling center and you see people of all ages on their mobile devices.
Mm.
So I think our attention spans have shortened, and we're in the moment and looking to be entertained and talking and dealing with our friends. So I think sometimes when you go into a bowling center, unfortunately, you see too many people doing things other than engaging with and enjoying the company of their friends and family there in the settee area or in the bowling center. But it's still a great sport, and a lot of youth programs prohibit the use of personal mobile devices, entertainment devices, phones, et cetera, when they're bowling, because they want you to be in the moment and enjoying your friends or your teammates.
If you're just joining us, we are with Yvonne Bennett. She is our tour guide, the head of the Bowling Centers Association of Wisconsin, which boasts more than 200 members. And hearing you reminisce as well about particular vintage area bowling centers that are part of your life, 800-642-1234. You can post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Let's go to Tom now in Burlington. Hi, Tom.
I have wonderful memories of bowling alleys here in Burlington, Wisconsin, and the Palace had a lane, and my parents would go there, and people would socialize. And that I wanted to bring up the point, they were talking about lowering the age of drinking to 18, and I wondered what your ideas were. I'm in favor of that now with the tremendous rise in drug abuse that we have in our state. And I think that if we lower the age to 18, kids can socialize more with adults, and you get connected. It used to be a place you go to a tavern, and you can find somebody who will give you a job, and they can kind of size you up and see what kind of a character you are. And
so,
I just wonder what your association thinks about that and increasing the level of drinking
at bowling centers, maybe. And Yvonne, what about alcohol and bowling centers?
Well, alcohol and bowling centers, as I said earlier, that's where our founding largely came here in Wisconsin and across the United States. I will say, as an official position of the Bowling Centers Association of Wisconsin, we have not discussed nor have we taken a formal policy or position on that issue. We are a member of the Tavern League of Wisconsin, so in many of our legislative affairs, we do follow their lead in terms of legislation that goes to Madison or into Washington. So I would not be really prepared to say what BCAW would take as a position, other than to say that our owners and our managers are responsible servers, and we have the luxury in Wisconsin, too, of many states don't allow minors to drink with their parents and guardians when they're in a place that serves alcohol. So that is something that is unique to Wisconsin. But again, our association really has not taken a formal position on that.
Tom, thanks so much. Let's go to Dan in Drummond. Hi, Dan.
Hello. I want to say, like John, I also pinch-hitted in Melbourne. But what I used to do for the team nights and all that, for the men, I used to do the scoring in that.
You used to score as well as set pins?
I would set pins for when people were practicing in that.
Uh-huh.
But for team nights and that, for the men's teams, I would come in and I would score for them.
Yvonne, were there scorekeepers as well who weren't playing but just focused on keeping score?
Yes, absolutely. In fact, some of my earliest memories as a teenager was keeping score for tournaments that came through the bowling centers that I was either growing up in or that my dad managed. So, yes, Dan's correct. Scorekeeping, I think we used to get paid maybe $1 a squad for tournaments in the 1960s and early 70s, again, when I was a kid. So, yes, that was an opportunity for kids to earn a little bit of pocket money and to be around the sport and around bowlers, perhaps their idols at the time. I know that some of the leagues and the tournaments that I got to watch back in the day, those were my idols. Those were people that, you know, I grew up in and admired. And so having that opportunity as a young person was a great benefit to me.
You've mentioned that scorers have gone higher. People have been getting higher scores with some changes to bowling alleys. And what is the difference between wood lanes and a synthetic material?
Well, probably the largest thing, and again, I'm not necessarily a technical person, but as a bowler, I can tell you that synthetic lanes, first of all, don't require the long-term maintenance that a wood lane does. A wood lane needs to be screened or resurfaced and relacquered every, depending on use, maybe even every year. Again, back home where I grew up, because of the high volume of bowling that took place back in the 70s and 80s, bowling centers would close in the summer and they would rescreen and resurface annually on wood surfaces. As synthetic lanes came into the marketplace, that allowed less maintenance on a long-term basis, but it's a very costly investment, and sometimes bowling centers may feel that they won't get the return on their investment by investing in synthetic lanes. So sometimes what we see is a center who has been cut down on their wood as far as they can cut down without, you know, going literally to the bottom of the wood panel, they will buy synthetic overlays or synthetic lanes from centers that are closing. So there is quite a bit of repurposing of equipment and machinery in the state of Wisconsin as centers are shuttered and go out of business. But it's really for the long-term maintenance of the bowling center that the transition has gone from wood to synthetic. I will also say that the insurability of bowling centers that still have wood and lacquer finishes, their fire hazards, and many bowling centers, when a fire starts, that lane bed and the wood becomes tender, that unfortunately makes the premises even more flammable. And we've lost, in the 4 years that I've had this position, I'm aware of three or four centers around the state that were wood lanes that were lost to fire, and it's a very sad and tragic thing when that happens.
Are you seeing bowling centers closing? What is the frequency of that?
Yes, bowling centers, unfortunately, are closing. There's a number of reasons that come into play, and as the real estate market has rebounded over the last couple of years, we've seen probably 15 or 20 bowling centers close just in the very recent, again, 2 or 3 years that I've been in this position. The real estate values, as I said, contribute to that, but also we're seeing families, second and third generations that have owned these businesses, some of them small bars and taverns like we've been talking about, others are larger facilities, maybe with entertainment centers or banquet halls. And as this generation of owners retires or approaches retirement age, we're finding that their children and their heirs may not want to work as hard as dad and mom or grandma and grandpa. And so bowling centers are being shuttered in hopes of being able to sell for the value of the real estate, or perhaps somebody in the community who will save them and buy them. And so we're also seeing an influx of centers that close and then reopen a year, two, three later as somebody new comes into the industry or into the business.
In small towns around Wisconsin, the bowling alley tavern is still a social hub. Perhaps that's why we feel a special attachment to dozens of these bowling centers dotting our landscape. Yvonne Bennett is our tour guide. She is the head of the Bowling Centers Association of Wisconsin. It has more than 200 members, and you can reminisce. Do you go to a particular vintage bowling center? Is there one in your community that closed? Perhaps you were a pin setter. 800-642-1234. Why do you love to bowl? What is it about your local bowling alley? 800-642-1234. We'll be back on Wisconsin Weekend after this news.
I like to go bowling with my friend Bert, with my bowling ball and my bowling shirt. I like to roll the ball down the lane.
These are places where scoring is still done with stubby pencils and paper. The scoring math is done in your head instead of a computer keeping track of the numbers. Bowling centers where the lanes are glistening in maple and pine wood. not synthetic material, perhaps, where real human pin setters may retrieve your ball and collect your pins. These vintage era bowling centers, dozens of them, are around Wisconsin. We're learning about them on this edition of Wisconsin Weekend. Yvonne Bennett is Executive Director of the Bowling Centers Association of Wisconsin. Let's hear about your favorite local bowling center. Is it also a pub? Do you go there with friends? 800-642-1234. Let's go to Lucy in Crandon. Hi, Lucy.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Well, anyway, there's a Chet and Amos restaurant in Burnhamwood, Wisconsin, and it has a four-lane bowling alley. And when they have a big wedding, they flip the floor and it turns into a dance floor.
No way. Really?
Yes.
Wow. So
isn't that cool?
That is very versatile. Yeah. And do you go there?
I've been there several times for dances and stuff, but it's a great place, and they have great chicken, and it's just a wonderful place. So I just thought I'd let you know that.
Well, let's get Yvonne to comment on Burnham Woods. Go ahead, Yvonne.
I'm actually very familiar. Thank you, Lucy, for calling in. We do a summer camp out up in Antigo every summer, my husband and some friends and family. And before I had this job, I actually stopped in to Chet and Emil's. Just curious about this place. I've seen the big chicken out on the highway there on Highway 45. And I was there in the summer, and I got to see the wood overlay that they had over the lanes. And she's absolutely right that for the summer after their leagues are over in May, they cover their lanes, and they don't reopen the lanes really for bowling until Labor Day when bowling starts again. And it's quite a nice facility. It's in a Quonset hut. The four lanes are a little Quonset hut kind of building that's adjacent to the restaurant, bar, and a hotel or motel. So, yes, it's a fun place.
And they're able to continue keeping their doors open, and they can keep the work of the people coming in by changing what they do, completely changing their business.
Exactly.
Have bowling centers had to be more creative in this day and age?
Yes, they definitely have. It's been one thing to, back in the heyday of bowling, just open the doors and people would come in, again, to congregate, bowl, drink, enjoy the food of the facility. But now more than ever, bowling center owners and managers must get out into their community and become known again to the people, especially as we see people moving in and out of our rural communities in Wisconsin. So the bartender owner must become just more engaged with their people and actively let people know, yes, we're open for business. Our bowling facilities are great opportunities for people to host small to very large social and corporate events even. So even the small 4 or 6 lane bowling center that's in a bar or tavern would be a great place for a private party, whether it's tied to a business or a family event. Birthday parties, things like that are very, very popular. Even in bars and taverns, there are many bowling centers that are in bars and taverns where if you go in on a Saturday, there's a birthday party going on with 6 or 8 year olds, and they're having a blast and a lot of fun. And, you know, it does my heart good to know that the community is still open to the fact that, yes, this is a bar with 4 or 6 lanes, but it's a socially acceptable place for children to come to have fun and enjoy their birthday with family and friends.
Many schools consider bowling a sport. How did bowling become affiliated with schools?
There's a few different ways that has happened. I think there was a natural transition in schools for other activities to become affiliated with the sports or the athletics department. Title IX, certainly at the collegiate level, has been a great windfall for women to bowl. Because of Title IX, colleges that offer scholarships must offer comparable opportunities for women. So the NC2A, as an example, has many college-level programs, including a couple here in the state of Wisconsin. UW-Whitewater, for example, on the women's side is an NC2A collegiate sport. Bowling as an industry has supported a program. It originally started under the old YABA, the Young American Bowling Alliance, is in-school bowling. Today, USBC has rebranded that Bowlers Education or Bowlers Ed, and BCAW is a supporter and promoter of the Bowlers Ed program. And that's an in-school program with carpets, bowling carpets, and plastic pins and rubber balls. And these kits go out into the school system, and BCAW, we own several of these kits. And then here in the Milwaukee area and in other areas around the state, the local USBC or the local proprietors group may have kits available to schools to introduce bowling as a phys ed opportunity in the school itself. Many schools, however, do field trips or there are phys ed classes in bowling centers. Just last week I was up in Green Bay at Riviera Lanes, and when I pulled into the parking lot at 10:30, I thought they were actually closed that morning. But then rolled a school bus with a bunch of high school kids that were coming on site for their phys ed class with a teacher, and they had that lower end of the bowling center open to them as they learned about bowling, you know, on real bowling lanes. So,
and Yvonne, we really have a quick question here from Barbara in Janesville that we want to get in here. Barbara,
okay.
Quickly go ahead.
Yes, you are nationally affiliated, so I am wondering if you're familiar with the bowling alley in Bossier, Louisiana, which is supposed to contain the wood floor from the old Louisiana hayride in Shreveport. Are you familiar with that?
I personally am not familiar with it. I am familiar with Bossier, Louisiana. I've heard of that, but I have not personally been there and not personally experienced with it, unfortunately, Barbara.
All right. Well, Barbara, thank you so much for calling in with that question. And we have to wrap up here, Yvonne. This has been a pleasure. And really quickly, before we sign off with you, what would you tell people about their local bowling center?
I would tell them that they are friendly and open for business. Our bowling center proprietors love servicing and providing opportunity in their communities. And it's just a great sport that everybody can do. Children to grandparents and great-grandparents can get out and enjoy this great game in a bowling center, whether it's two or four lanes, or our largest center is here in the Milwaukee area, 72 lanes, AMF Bolero.
Wow.
They're here to serve you and enjoy your company. Go out and enjoy bowling.
Yvonne Bennett is Executive Director of the Bowling Centers Association of Wisconsin, based in Pewaukee. We've been taking a tour of the vintage bowling centers around Wisconsin, learning about what makes them so special. And we're crowdsourcing Wisconsin Weekend. Tip us off on something cool that could reach all corners of our state. We'd love to produce a show on it. Send along your ideas for Wisconsin Weekend to mornings@wpr.org. That's mornings@wpr.org. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Tucked inside the basement of a neighborhood bar in southwest Milwaukee, you'll find the oldest bowling alley in the country. The Holler House has been welcoming customers for over 100 years and hasn't changed much in that time. Machines have never replaced the human pin setters, and bowlers keep score by hand. Maureen McCullum visited the landmark during a Sunday afternoon men's league and learned how Holler House got its name.
A man came in here one day and he said, "Would you like to get drunk with me? My wife's in California." And I said, "Sure, what the heck?" And then the following week when she came back, she's a little German lady. And the day he brought her in, there was a political convention. Everybody's arguing politics. The jukebox is going. Somebody's playing that beat-up piano, and she didn't know where to look. So the following week, he was taking her out to dinner. And he says to her, "Where would you like to go for a couple cocktails before I take you to dinner?" She said, "Take me to that Holler House." My name is Marcy Skaronski, and I've been here 61 years. My in-laws built this place. Oldest sanctioned bowling alley in the nation. Once it's sanctioned, then you like if you bowl a 300, and then it counts. Yeah.
These are the original lanes, I believe. Yeah. So you know, 100 years of rolling balls down it. You know, even the approach, it's kind of gnarly here. You know, but it's great. That's why you like it here. You know.
Yeah, we keep track of score on paper.
Kids nowadays have to get the calculators out. We do it manually.
No computers. It's kind of unplugging. We're all plugged in all the time. So I'm Brian.
Larson.
My name's John. John Knacker. I've been bowling here since 1978. It's just nice to get out of the house during the winter and.
What'd you get, John?
Spare.
Nice.
Get some good exercise.
Is that what's the 12-ounce curl?
Hey, I'm throwing an 18-pound ball.
Sunday fun day. Love Sunday.
I bowled till I was about 72, because I'm 89 now. The way I throw my ball, it was so slow that the pin boy just about fell asleep before it hit. That's how, let me just go.
I think I'm faster than a machine. Personally, Carmelo Silva, and what I usually do here is set pins. People bowl here, and I've been working here since 8th grade, 4 years now. It's a unique job, and that's what I like about it as well. A lot of people ask me to take pictures with them, to sign their score sheets, and I'm just a pin boy. I didn't know I would be taking pictures or signing stuff.
It's comforting knowing that there's some things that don't change, you know, that, I mean, we all like change, but there's some things, there's comfort in knowing that something's always gonna be there, or we hope it does. My name's Matthew Oak. Still in my third year, actually. I guess I say only because a lot of these guys, you know, it's like decades long.
We got nice people that come here. Some friends of ours that have been coming in here 50, 60 years. And then the old pin boys, when they go into their careers and they retire, and they, when they were in Milwaukee, they still come and see me.
Oh! That's good effort. Close to no cigar.
Good effort.
You know all these guys like family. Marcy's the greatest person in the world and a great cook.
The beer tastes great every time you come here, that's for sure. Right.
Maureen McCollum is the host of Morning Edition on Wisconsin Public Radio. Wisconsin Life is produced by Erica Janik. It's a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Television in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook. This Wisconsin Weekend on the Morning Show was produced by Nyasia Ellison. Michelle Johnson is executive producer. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and you're listening to the Ideas Network. Stay with us.